And you are listening to the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the canceled television shows of the horror, science fiction, and fantasy genre. And I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
In tonight's episode of Constantine, the complete series, episode 3 is The Devil's Vinyl. And Mr. Seneca has the synopsis for us.
The Devil's Vinyl originally aired November 7th, 2014. Zed and John must save a woman and her family from sinister forces by engaging in a dangerous confrontation. John is faced with a powerful new adversary.
Powerful new adversary. And who could that be? We'll get to that eventually. Let's see. So the episode opens with this woman, Jasmine, breaking into some place with dead squirrels hanging in front of the entrance.
Basically, there's like dead animals on strings, dead animals on the ground, some of them still twitching. So, you know, this is kind of like a fresh... scene. And it kind of looks like something that a twisted, like, serial killer would just, like, have their, graffiti laid and, hole that they're just packing, like, killing animals because they can't kill a human yet type of thing.
Put the soap in the basket or get the hose again.
Yeah. And so, like, these animals twitching on the floor, bloody and all that. And right on the wall is this huge symbol, which unfortunately I couldn't figure out exactly what that symbol were, if that was symbol was a real kind of arcane symbol. But she breaks open the wall and then pulls out this package, and inside the package is the Devil's Vinyl.
The so Lords of the or the or the or it's the album from the movie The Lords of Salem. if you saw that movie, there's a record that's given to the radio show host played by Sherry Moon Zombie. When she plays it, it plays this hypnotic music that is indicative to the music of the Lords of Salem. You can hear some of it right here. And that was our clip from The Lords of Salem with the creepy music being played. That's exactly what it reminded me of, because she goes right to a radio station afterwards. You're like, oh, it is like The Lords of Salem.
Totally. And throughout the whole episode, they refer to this as the acetate.
Now, I wonder, what year was this episode again?
This year was 2014.
Okay, so this is a year after The Lords of Salem came out. Lords of Salem came out in April... Yeah, April of 2013. So this was a year and a half after that movie by Rob Zombie came out.
Yeah, I just reused the props.
Basically. Who the hell walls up into a wall a record?
Well, if it's that dangerous, he wanted to hide it. We find out later in the episode that it was the attempts to destroy the album all failed. So, he did what, he could. He just tried to put it somewhere that no one's going to find it. And, that did not work so well.
That's one way to do it.
Yeah, I'm not sure that would be the way that I would do it. But, and this record has mysterious powers. The recording was done by Memphis blues man Willie Cole. And so while it was being recorded we find out what's the name of the studio? Moonrise Records. Moonrise Records. So while it was being recorded, the devil actually came and took Willie Cole's life. And so the record is actually recording the real, true voice of the devil. And that's what powers this album and causes it to be kind of like a demonic possession item. This whole episode, to me, felt a lot like a Friday the 13th, the series episode. It ran through the same kind of arc in the very beginning. You see the cursed object. You see its effect on someone. Cut to, the logo and opening sequence. And then you go to the vault, where they keep the cursed objects.
Yes, so, exactly. Kind of like the Warren's cellar in The Conjuring. Or yes. In real life, by the way, if you ever visited Lorraine Warren's house, you can take a tour through her containment unit, I like to call it.
Are we Ghostbusters?
Yes, but well, that's basically what the Warrens were. They were real-life Ghostbusters, and they had their own supernatural safe house, very similar to what Chaz says, which is also something that Sam and Dean Winchester have in the Men Letters bunker. Supernatural.
I guess the people that do this kind of job, they kind of have to have a supernatural safe house, because you can't trust muggles with this stuff.
Yeah. No, apparently not, especially after that last movie proved.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. So, you know, Bernie Reed is actually the guy that Jasmine takes the record to, and he is told that he needs to authenticate it, but he's not to listen to it. And she repeats that to him a lot, many times, you know, as mentioned. So he's not to listen to it, but he just can't help it. He puts on the headphones, and this really cool, like, ice effect starts to happen over his ears. And he just starts screaming and just, like, muttering and trying to kind of get the sound out of his head. So he takes kind of like a long-handled screwdriver and just shoves it right in his ear.
Yeah. Ow.
Yeah, really terrible way to die. So Bernie Reed is dead. And ends up this guy was actually a friend of Constantine, and so that's how he's kind of looped into this whole thing.
Seems like a really close friend of Constantine, because he takes it pretty personally later on when he goes to the morgue.
Well, he was the producer, in this episode stated, the producer for Mucous Membrane, his old band.
Ah.
Yeah, he's got a lot of feels by Bernie Reed's death. But the first time we actually see Constantine in this episode is really funny. He's covered in blood head to toe, cavorting and chanting and basically learning a spell, as Chaz says, in a salt circle inside the supernatural safe house. And fun fact here is that this learning of a spell is actually a spell that he says later on in the episode. You know, it might seem unrelated at the very first scene where we see him, but it actually comes into play, but not mentioned whatsoever. You know, you have to listen very carefully to understand that these two things are connected.
I love it when Constantine points out that the stigmata and the nails can be used as tracking devices when you put them in someone's pocket.
Okay. We got to step back here. Stigmata is not the word for that. Spots of blood on a map are not stigmata. Stigmata specifically refers to the wounds of Jesus Christ and their appearance basically continuously throughout his resurrection. So people that have stigmata have these wounds of Jesus on them. Drops of blood on a map are not stigmata. Like, the first time I watched this, and I watched this episode like 3 times, but the first time I saw this, and every single time after, it pissed me off that they used the word stigmata.
Yeah, I didn't understand that thing about the map when they said that, but I understood the thing about the nails when he's like, oh, I use the nails in order to track somebody. I was like, okay, that's fine, but I don't understand what the hell he's talking about with the map.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not, you know, what that's called. So it's actually called hematomancy. Hematomancy, because you know, hem is usually blood and mancy is divination. So that's really what it's called, but they call it stigmata. Really stuck in my craw.
Stuck in your craw.
Totally did. but the nails are actually interesting. The nails, they Constantine calls them St. Padua nails.
Mm-hmm. And what's that from?
The full name is actually Saint Anthony of Padua.
Okay.
And so he was an actual saint. Some of his miracles include, like, what we would call, like, teleportation.
Mm-hmm.
So he has appeared in order to give a sermon somewhere, and yet he was also in another place giving a sermon somewhere else. So he kind of split, you know, his appearances. He has protected a whole audience during a sermon from a crash of one of the stages and you know, stuff that he was doing, and also protected a different crowd from rain, you know, downpour of rain, but yet everyone in the audience was dry. So because he has actually these miracles, and I'm not sure if these are just, you know, actual miracles, but they're considered miracles, and that's why he was sainted, did a lot of really great things, and he founded convents and really good person. And one of the points for him that I think the show takes after is that he is also kind of a keeper of lost objects. You can invoke a Saint Anthony of Padua to recover things lost. And so therein lies that, you know, maybe the coffin nails from his coffin will direct you to something that's lost. So that I thought that was a bit interesting there.
He mentions that Willie sold his soul to the devil when he goes to confront the singer. I immediately started thinking, and they were talking about the flashbacks with that old jazz singer. I immediately started, when they visited the old man in the hospital, before they met up with Jasmine's husband, and you get the truth. Again, I was thinking of Crossroads Demons, and again, I go back to Supernatural, only because they did an episode about this. Who's the famous jazz singer that supposedly sold his soul to the devil for a better career?
Oh, no, I know the episode you're talking about, but I can't pull up the actual performer at the moment.
No, yeah, it's Hellhound on My Heels, and that's the name of the song, Hellhound on My Heels. I'm going to look it up right now. Hellhound, okay, here's the picture, but where's the name? Robert Johnson. Robert Johnson is the jazz singer that wrote Hellhound on My Heels. Hellhound on My Trail, and was the rumors surrounding his career taking a huge turnaround was that he made a deal with the devil, because he was a know-nothing blues singer. You know, it was already hard to be a musician being a black man back then, but all of a sudden he's just insanely popular, just like that. No explanation. Yeah. You know what I mean? To this day. And then he had a weird death too. So again, there's a lot of controversy surrounding Robert Johnson. So I don't think they say Robert Johnson in this episode. They don't say that. But they're definitely basing that flashback with that blues black, you know, that African-American jazz singer on the tale of Robert Johnson. Because also the fact that Constantine's owned by the WB and they also own Supernatural, maybe the writers happen to have worked for both and were like, maybe we do something different because we kind of already did this on another show we owned 10 years ago.
The song that Willie Cole, you know, the character Willie Cole, sings on the album is actually a song that was, I believe, written for this episode by Martin Yarbrough, called Reaper Man. And you can actually find the full song on YouTube. It's very good. But, you know, here's a clip right here.
Comes sinking low, shadows gonna rise.
So that's Reaper Man. Love the song. You can listen to it in full. Unfortunately, I don't think they're going to release the song in any sort of album for Constantine or anywhere else. All I could find was the YouTube version of it. But I would have loved to hear more from Martin Yarbrough. All right, so next we go to a place where Bernie Reed is actually, you know, I wouldn't say interred, but he's in the morgue, and they need to get in. So Zed does this really sly, you know, bumping into someone and then takes their key card so they can get into the building. Just proves how, you know, useful she is. And that's also continuing thing for this episode is how useful is Zed to Constantine, because this is her first official on the duty sidekick duty with Constantine. One of the objects that Constantine pulls out is actually called a hand of glory. A hand of glory, he says that the left hand of a hanged man pickled in amniotic fluid for 7 years, and you know, he lights the fingertips on fire and he can speak to the deceased for as long as it burns. That's not exactly what a hand of glory really does. They have some truth here. It is a pickled, you know, dried pickled hand. It has been hanged. You know, usually it's the left hand. And this person must have been a murderer. The hand is cut off then the fat of the body is actually rendered into a candle, and the hand is actually kind of cupped, you know, or flattened, so that the candle made from the rendered fat is sitting in the hand like a candelabra, like a candlestick. Powers of the Hand of Glory is not to speak to the deceased, but it's really for to make someone motionless, you know, to kind of petrify them a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it could also perhaps unlock doors, to see places where you're not known to see. But when they use it, this is the jump scare of the entire episode, is when they use it, it's an area effect. So, like, you know, in D&D, like, area effect 30 feet. So all of the corpses start to kind of writhe and scream, and they're kind of reliving the last moments of their existence. Kind of painful, I think, you know, but his friend Bernie kind of wakes up and says just a couple tiny little phrases as clues, and then the area effect kind of comes, you know, smaller and smaller until the hand has extinguished and, you know, they're just standing there. And so Constantine says that the using the hand, it actually takes a few days off of the end of his life. In the arcane 18th century knowledge, because you can actually find instructions on how to make a hand of glory in the Compendium Maleficarum. But
we should never actually try and do that anytime soon, ever.
It would be hard to find a hanged man these days and age, because usually the hanged man would have been gotten from the side of the road or in front of a city as warning to all passers through.
Yes.
And you don't really do that anymore.
Yeah, no, it's too bad we don't do a hanging anymore. We haven't had a good old one in quite some time.
You know, public executions, yay!
No, unfortunately not. We're just doing it in the good old electric chair and the needles with the gas or the chemicals or whatever it is they do nowadays. Nothing fancy.
The art has
gone out of a good old execution.
So
they go over to the singer's house. The recording
producer's, I wouldn't say deathbed, really. Marcus Mooney, who actually produced the Moonrise Records album.
Back in the day for the flashback that I mentioned.
Yeah, in like the 1930s. So he's an old guy. He's on his literal deathbed and tells them that a private investigator came around and he told the private investigator about it. So, you know, that caused the acetate to be found. And, he's just very concerned about no one actually listening to it because, you know, the effect that it has. And one of the rules of the acetate is no one is supposed to touch it with their bare hands, not only because it's fragile, but perceived to be fragile. No one's supposed to touch it with their hands because it has a power of, like, possession.
Mm-hmm.
So it can kind of control you in order to do its bidding. And its bidding is, I want to be played to the biggest audience ever so everyone can kill themselves. You know, for Satan. Yeah.
Then we go to the producer's house. The musician's house. And Constantine confronts him, thinking that it's him who made the deal, when we find out that it's his wife who actually did to save his life of cancer.
Yeah. A very sweet, romantic thing. You know, your husband is dying of cancer, only has 1 month or two to live. She wanted to find, you know, some sort of answer. And this guy, Anton, a soul broker, you know, like a ambulance-chasing lawyer, is just skulking around in the hospital looking for sad cases and then, you know, trades her soul for her husband's health. And it worked, you know. And the parchment that she has, you know, is really old-looking, has these symbols on it. When the symbols disappear, that's when she's going to basically be taken. So I did a little bit of investigation on the symbols. You know, I've got a whole lot of, you know, occult books. And so I was looking in the Goetia, the Lesser Keys of Solomon the King. And the last symbol, the symbol that's actually the last one on the page, and that it remains on the page when the camera kind of pans to it, when the others are disappearing, it's actually the Seal of Marbus, and he's called the Great President in the form of a great lion. And then at the request of the master, basically, he can put on human shape, and he answers things that are hidden or secret. He causes diseases or cures diseases. So this was actually very... they chose this one for the show specifically, and that type of thought into this, I really appreciate. So the Seal of Marbus also can give great wisdom and knowledge in mechanical arts, and can change men into other shapes. So... just a little note there, demonites.
When Constantine goes to find out the real person responsible for all of this, to get help for what he needs or whatever, he goes to Papa Midnight, which is the first introduction of Papa Midnight for the show, and kind of considered to be John Constantine's his Joker, his Lex Luthor in a way.
Yeah, you know, he's kind of helpful. Kind of an enemy, kind of an ally at times. They have this kind of feud between them over, you know, not who's better, but just who's more legit.
Mm-hmm. And Papa Midnight first appeared in the very first issue of Hellblazer back in the Vertigo days.
Yeah, the costuming for Papa Midnight, completely different from the comic. In the comic, Papa Midnight usually wears a white suit, top hat with purple sashes and you know, accessories. And in this episode, he's wearing this kind of goldish tapestry jacket, looking a little bit like a pimp.
Yeah, whereas like in the comic books, he looks like a voodoo priest.
Yeah, you know, I think in the comic book, they were trying to give Papa Midnight more of a Baron Samedi look, because Baron Samedi is known for wearing the top hat, mm-hmm. but they made the costume white to differentiate. So in this one, having him wear this kind of gold tapestry jacket, it's like, really, man? You're gonna wear that? Okay, yeah.
Papa Midnight doesn't actually have a whole heck of a lot of appearances in the beginning of Hellblazer back in 1988 until Garth Ennis took over writing the book and brought him back and expanded upon his origins. And he appeared in like 47 issues afterwards until he was killed off in Hellblazer number 75. As far as I'm aware, in the DC's New 52, and I've only read the Hellblazer Rebirth Volume 1, Papa Midnight has not shown up, but I might be wrong that he's shown up in the New 52. I just have not read all of the New 52, and I've only read the Hellblazer Rebirth Volume 1 of the new DC Rebirth story arcs. He didn't show up in Justice League Dark, so... he might not have been carried over yet from the Vertigo universe as like Chaz or Zeb have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know whether he could come back as perhaps a spirit that haunts John Constantine.
John Constantine has a brand new history with the New 52 in DC's Rebirth, so if he does show up, he would just be like, I'm here and alive, and I never died, because that was a separate universe that got folded into this one. The long story short, it's too late. The long story short, but too late explanation of the Vertigo universe being folded into the New 52.
He goes to see Papa Midnight because Papa Midnight is the one behind... well, he doesn't go to see him. Like, he's there. He goes to see Anton, and Anton is the middleman. He's the demon broker, the soul broker. And by Constantine actually saying Ian Fell's name, apparently it puts off the deal for Anton. If Papa Midnight knows where to find the acetate, then he's not going to have Anton be the middleman and hold the deal. So Papa Midnight wants it for his own nefarious purpose. Like, he wants this as a bargaining chip with the devil.
Mm-hmm.
It's plausible, you know, to try to hold something over the devil, but it's not wise. But he wants it, and so he'll send his goons over to Ian Fell, Jasmine Fell's house where Zed is, and try to take the acetate from him. Now, in the meantime, while this is happening, their daughter actually tries to listen to the audio record, and you know, because the power of the cold and the freezing wherever it is, you can tell exactly where it is on the shelf of albums, because everywhere around there is just frozen. The daughter takes it and starts to listen to it, and her eyes are glowing like she's becoming possessed, but they stop it just in time before it actually cuts to the devil's real voice.
By the way, for anyone listening, Mr. Zeneca and I are going to be doing a fan commentary of the movie Constantine, which Papa Midnight is also in. And Papa Midnight in that movie was played by, I'm going to mispronounce his name, so excuse me, Jamon Hanasu, who you might know as one of those kind of character actors who's been in The Legend of Tarzan, Blood Diamond, Furious 7. He was the guardian of the temple in the Guardians of the Galaxy, who works for Ronan the Accuser, who like encounters Star-Lord, and Star-Lord's like, "I'm Star-Lord." And he's like, "Who?" He's like, "Come on, man, Star-Lord, you know me." That is the actor who played Papa Midnight in the Keanu Reeves Constantine movie.
And, you know, honestly, I like the costume design for Papa Midnight in the Constantine movie better than I like it in this television series.
Yeah, isn't that weird? You can kind of flip-flop back and forth about what you like about the movie and what you didn't like about the show. It's kind of strange, even though we mainly like the show more.
Yeah, there's a lot bad with the movie. Like,
yeah.
A lot bad.
Yeah. A lot of it to do with John Constantine.
I've been reading the Hellblazer comics, and then now I have context, and when I rewatch the movie, I'm like, oh, this is terrible. You know, as a movie on its own, even that is a bit bad, but I did still like it. Now that I have the context, I'm like, whoa, they did all of this wrong. Yeah, but...
By the way, I love how they refer to the devil as the voice of the first of the fallen, and don't call him Lucifer.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Lucifer, Morningstar. Usually when you have an encounter with Satan or the devil or whatnot, they usually refer to him by a variety of names. Just because he has a variety of names, or maybe they're just attributing those elements to him. There is some theological argument over Lucifer, Satan, the devil. All of those characters might actually be separate people.
I've never heard that before.
There is some theological debate about that.
Oh. That's interesting. I've never heard that before. I've always thought they were just the same thing, but like different names. Like you have different names for who your parents are. Father, dad, daddy, things like that.
Yeah, it's actually more of a aspect. So while Lucifer, or Morningstar, is actually most agreed upon to be a specific angel, once the fall happens, any other name given to that could be just an aspect. So Satan isn't actually like a single person or a single angel or a single thing. It's actually an aspect, and so it's like the evil inside. So you know, there's of course debate about it, but I feel that in the pop culture where they say all these names back to back to back, you know, like in the Constantine movie, you know, first the fallen, liar, father of lies, like all of these things are just aspects of personality more than they are status or, you know, a rank and file.
Mm-hmm.
So next thing we know, Papa Midnight is blowing some powder in his face, and then he wakes up zip-tied to kind of a grate of some sort in kind of an abandoned warehouse. And he says the line, which I think in this episode is the yum moment of the episode for me.
Oh, I thought this whole scene would be your yum moment, considering that he is tied down and getting cut open and bleeding, and it's just very S&M-like in its appearance.
There, definitely. But the line that he says, which he says it in this like kind of joking way, it's kind of sexy, is, "I don't use zip ties without a safe word." Good on you. Good on you. You shouldn't. You should always have a safe word.
You should always have consent and a safe word.
Yes, and in this scene, he has neither, because it's not consensual.
No, yeah. See, this is the first rule of BDSM 101.
Yes, always, no matter how violent it might seem, it must always be consensual.
Yes.
So Papa Midnight injects him in the neck with an anticoagulant and then puts a bottle of vitamin K out of reach. That's not really how those things work. He could put an anticoagulant into him, but it wouldn't be injected into his neck like it is. It would have been perhaps put into a vein rather than not the muscles. And vitamin K is an element in your blood that you need for clotting, but taking more of it when you're bleeding won't help you. It's kind of a built-up thing, which you can have, like alcoholics have a huge problem with lack of vitamin K in their system. So they have a huge problem with lots of bruising, bleeding profusely, that type of thing, because they lack vitamin K.
Ah, okay.
You gain vitamin K in a lot of different vegetables, a lot of different foods that you eat, spinach being a good one for vitamin K, and you can also take supplements. But taking a supplement when you're bleeding won't help you because it needs to digest and it needs to kind of be, go through all of your system and your cells. If Constantine is not an alcoholic, which he does drink, but it doesn't seem in the show that he drinks profusely, once in a while, yeah, but it's not like he's falling over drunk all the time.
True.
So he should have enough vitamin K in his blood cells to really kind of counter the anticoagulant to some extent in the way that it was actually injected.
The acetate that everyone's so hopped up to try and find in this episode, including the goons that break into the house, is that in any type of like mythology, lore, or any of your books?
I did a lot of research into the voice of God and the voice of the devil.
Well, the voice of God can be found in the Bible. Don't you know? Today's Easter, of course.
It is. Today's Easter. Easter Sunday, for all of you people listening.
Yes, all you Christians. By the time this airs, it'll be Wednesday after Easter, so the Lord has come back to us. According to the churches, by the way, around here, especially here in New England, it's the number one greatest comeback, the second greatest comeback being Tom Brady in the Super Bowl this year.
Oh, no. Zombie Lich, or Zombie Jesus, Lich Jesus, yeah.
Yeah, there was a whole march in the streets here in Worcester. They had a big Jesus march with, like, a golden Jesus and everything. There was, like, hundreds of people marching behind the golden Jesus.
In Philadelphia, we actually have an Easter Day zombie bar crawl.
Oh, cool.
So one of my friends actually loves to dress as Jesus and Zombie Jesus, and so I don't think he went this year because he just is a new couple of babies to take care of. But all along South Street here in Philadelphia, this major bar crawl happens on Easter Sunday, and you go from bar to bar to bar, and everyone's dressed as zombies, and they kind of have drink specials, and pictures are pretty wild. It's fun. I usually have family obligations, and I can't do it, but a couple of my friends do, and it's really a good time.
In a few more years, when your son's old enough, you should bring him to one of these, when he's old enough to drink, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, although by the time he's old enough to drink, he'll probably go, oh,
Mom, is that cool? I don't want to do it with you. God. And then he's going to, like, he'll have known about certain things, and he'll be like, you're going to have all your weird friends there. I can't do with that.
My worst fear is that my son will grow up to be like an Alex P. Keaton, conservative Republican asshole.
Oh no! And then he will definitely disavow you as a mother.
Yeah, for real. Yeah.
Well, it's all about how you raise them, right? By the way, I went to look up the radio station that they are talking about, Tiger Radio WIXA. I could not find it online, so that is a made-up radio station for this episode. That would be something I look up, having to do Radio of Horror, and of course we record these episodes at a radio station. So that was something that was kind of important to me to look up, and it does not exist. Tiger Radio might exist, but maybe not WIXA.
97.5 Tiger Radio.
Tiger Radio.
So, like, Constantine is bleeding out here because Papa Midnight has just cut open his arm, and a rat is on his chest, just kind of kicking it. If a rat was actually on a bleeding person, they would be eating at that wound.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Rats, yeah. And then suddenly, Manny appears.
Yes. Harold Panamu. Panamu. Pana. That guy from Lost. Go on. Yeah, so Manny appears to save John Constantine's life.
Well, you think he's there to save his life, you know, but
you hope so. No, he's like, yeah, I can't help you, buddy. Sorry.
I'm not allowed to interfere. You got this handled. And in the sarcastic tone of voice, and it's like, great, buddy.
Manny, you're an angel who protects people, not Uatu the Watcher from, you know, Marvel Comics, who is supposed to watch and not interfere.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, when Manny poof disappears, in his place is this bum that ends up taking his shoes and, you know, ends up stealing the card that this magical card that he and looks to be whatever the user wants it to look like. Who comes and saves John Constantine? But Zed. Zed saves the day because John had, earlier in the episode, planted one of the nails from Saint Padua, Anthony Padua, put one of the nails on Jasmine, and then John had the other one so that he could always track her. Zed reverses the situation, takes the nail from Jasmine, and then, you know, tracks John Constantine. Now, since the nails only point to direction, how she actually found him, complete mystery. But, you know, that's the whole thing. Movie magic! So she finds him, rescues him, and then they come to find out that the record was actually played at a nightclub. You know, I don't know how many people died, but it seemed like a lot because it was a full nightclub. And the only person that survived was a deaf guy.
Playing that record at any time seems to draw death and destruction to everything, especially since, Midnight's crew begin playing the record on the campus radio, and they die.
Yeah, and I guess it just causes people to do things to themselves, to do things to other people, just kind of, you know, slashing and clawing at each other.
Mm. What's the name of the song that John uses in order to block out the music from himself?
That is actually Anarchy in the UK by the Sex Pistols.
So I'm not a huge Sex Pistol fan. I'm more of a Ramones fan. I know that's blasphemy, but I'm sorry, but the Ramones rule.
They do. And I think when he's they actually have a Ramones song early in the episode when he's learning his spell. It's in the background. Did you catch that one?
No, I didn't. I will have to check out the ending of the episode once again.
Yeah. So it's like when he's learning the spell, song plays. But anyway, he has headphones in to prevent him from listening to the Sex Pistols. But the headphones kind of get ripped out of his ears when everyone goes crazy, and then he starts to go crazy. But he doesn't attack anyone. He just kind of writhes on the floor, covering his ears.
Mm-hmm.
Until who saves the day? Papa Midnight and Chaz. Chaz and Zed ram Chaz's taxi into the power for the station itself, so the album couldn't be broadcasted, you know, all over. And then Papa Midnight blows up the speakers internally in the room, and while he himself has earplugs in. And I'm not sure whether Papa Midnight was doing this simply to reclaim his property from his goons because they've kind of gone rogue because they're possessed, or he's doing it because he's pissed off at them for going rogue. Kind of a nuance there, but basically uses a Winchester rifle that was owned by a mystic in the Old West that never misses. There's no other information on that rifle, but this episode has a lot of objects in it.
Yeah, I mean, they Chaz earlier in the episode makes a mention that the place they're in, again, the supernatural safe house, is owned by a friend, and they collect all sorts of artifacts in it. And again, I want to remember, but I haven't seen these episodes since they first aired 2 years ago now. Now we're coming up on 2 years ago, so I'm rewatching them for this podcast. I don't think it's ever said who owns it exactly, but I think it's alluded to that the place they're in is owned by Dr. Fate.
It was Jasper Winter, which was in the pilot episode.
That's right.
He died, and then that was his kind of safe house that he built.
Correct. Jasper Winters has been a longtime, what do you call it, a mystical character in the DC Universe, appearing in comic books like Night Force and Swamp Thing. In fact, he was in the first issue of Swamp Thing that John Constantine first appeared in, which was one of the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover issues, which also had the Stranger and Hawkman and Batman in it, and Swamp Thing as well. Baron Winters is his other name, most notably in the series called Night Force, which was kind of a supernatural book in the DC Universe, and it was relaunched in the New 52. He was in control of the House of Secrets, the House of Mystery. And he first appeared back in with his Night Force team back in the New Teen Titans in issue number 21, created by Marv Wolfman and George Perez.
Nice.
So he's got a long history with DC Comics, making sporadic appearances, if you will. Again, Night Force being the most biggest one. And Night Force is kind of like a Justice League Dark. They're a group of mystical, supernatural collection of supernatural beings who reside in the House of Mystery.
Yeah, and I actually, on your recommendation, I started reading the Justice League Dark, and it is quite good.
Yeah, that was really good. The movie, again, really changed a lot of things, mainly because the first volume of the comic book used the Enchantress, and she was used in the, of course, she's part of the Suicide Squad as part of that movie, so for the animated film, they decided to change it up a bit and not include the Enchantress in that story.
Just because she was used in Suicide Squad,
correct. And let's face it, you look at the Enchantress in that Justice League Dark, and her most of her appearances throughout the DC Universe, she looks like a dime store Halloween costume witch.
Yeah.
Compared to the Suicide Squad, where she was like a swamp witch.
Swampy, yeah.
Very swamp witch. She kind of looks like the mummy in the upcoming Tom Cruise mummy movie, which I'm sure we will have a lot of fun talking about when we get there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they have to grab the radio producer guy, who is played by a former guest of this show, who I tried to have on for this podcast to drop 5 minutes of wisdom into us about his appearance on Constantine, Sean Whalen, who is always known as that guy in that stuff. That's kind of like, if you ever go to one of his booths at a convention, he's always known as that guy who's in that, he's like everywhere. Because look at his IMDb
totally
page. He has been in, like, everything. And the two biggest things that people know him for a lot are, like, Twister, People Under the Stairs, one of the movies by the late, great Wes Craven.
Excellent. He's just this character actor. You'd recognize his face even if you don't know his name.
Correct. Definitely.
So, Constantine, in order to kind of vanquish the situation, since Manny had told him that Constantine knows what to do, Constantine does it. You know, he sends the album to hell. Literally, he sends it to hell. So this, like, huge hell mouth hole opens up in the floor of the recording studio where they have the turntable, and you can see down several, maybe several hundred feet or something. It's just like black lava-ish, char. This huge hole. No idea how they're gonna fix that, but. Now their studio has a huge gaping hole and not safe for people anymore. that's a reconstruction job I wouldn't put on any contractor.
No, not especially not if that happened here at WCUW. I would be very worried if we'd ever get it fixed.
Yeah, yeah. After that, Constantine goes back to the Fell House, where Jasmine is looking quite ill because she is about to get her soul taken. The last seal is on there, and that's the last one remaining, and she's looking all drab and kind of CG terrible. The only way to reverse the contract is to have Anton eat the contract, which he does. Takes a bit of time, but for him breaking a soul deal, Constantine mentions earlier in the episode that it makes Anton lose parlay with the underworld. So I don't know what this will do to Anton's reputation, but perhaps Anton will not be brokering souls anymore, and perhaps will in fact get something really terrible to happen to him because he actually, broke a deal. I'm not sure if I mentioned exactly when the spell from the beginning of the episode that he was practicing ends up working, but that's, in case I didn't mention it, that's the the Hand of Glory spell that he did with Bernie's body. That was the spell that he was actually practicing, if you take a real close look.
I would also have to say that the douchebag moment of this episode, because we didn't mention it when it happens, probably doesn't go to Constantine, because he doesn't do anything douchebaggery in this episode. It should go to Manny for leaving Constantine.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck, Manny?
He appears for no reason, just to taunt Constantine. Didn't add anything to the moving of the plot.
No.
He just teased Constantine and then left.
I think he was only needed to be there because his name's in the credits.
Yeah.
Or maybe the writers forgot about him. They were like, oh, we gotta write Manny in.
Yeah, just an appearance, just to make sure that we all know that there are other forces involved, and you know, I'll fly away.
Yeah, that's pretty
really
much it.
Douchebag.
Yeah, definitely. Always, you gotta love when your guardian angel doesn't want to help you out.
Yeah, I mean, if Constantine had a real guardian angel that was, you know, kind of tied to him, I don't think Manny is truly tied to Constantine. But if he had one, that guardian angel will be working overtime.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because Constantine gets himself into scraps all the time, and if he could have some divine intervention for these things, he could definitely use it.
There's a comic book I highly recommend. She doesn't show up on the show, but you know, maybe if there was a season two, we would have gotten her. The only live action appearance of this character I've ever seen was on Smallville, and I thought they did it perfectly well. Was Zatanna is a longtime friend, sometimes lover, sometimes wants to stab Constantine in the throat kind of person, as most women who probably slept with Constantine feel that way. Zatanna, the magician of the Justice League who can say words backwards and they come, you know, come, that's her magic powers, has a one-shot, and Constantine guest stars in it because she has to help him get out of a scrap where he's been turned into a cat. Because of a woman he slept with.
Yep.
And she's just like, oh, wow, what a surprise. And the artwork in it is very kind of Linda Sedgwick, if you know who I am referring to. She does Bloodstain. Her husband does Sunstone. The artwork in it is got kind of a Disney flair to it, just the way it's drawn, which looks perfect for an adult-themed comic book such as that. But that's a character I would have loved to have seen show up that feels jilted by Constantine, as most of the women who will appear on the show would do.
Yeah, he just has a trail of tears, man.
A trail of tears. Bang him and leave him. That's his. That's basically his motto.
Oh, anyone who's around Constantine either gets slighted because he cons them, dead because, you know, he uses them as bait or something, has a broken heart because they end up falling for him in some way, and he is incapable of even loving himself. So there was talk. I don't know how real, you know, convention rumors are, but there was talk about Constantine perhaps getting married in a future issue. No one liked that idea.
Yeah, no, that should never happen whatsoever.
No.
Not at all.
He's not marriage material.
No, the only thing I would ever love about Constantine's personal life is possibly going into explanation about his backstory, and I think they did that in one thing. There's like a Lady Constantine miniseries that you can pick up, which I don't know if that's referring to Constantine's mother or grandmother.
Don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it could be his niece, Gemma? Because she also has the talent, like Constantine. So she has the talent, but not the learned skill. And Constantine has this talent, you know, he rides on the waves of synchronicity. All of his magic is learned. So maybe it's Gemma. I don't know. I'll have to look that up.
You do want to purchase The Hellblazer Rebirth Volume 1. I highly recommend it. It's very good. John has to team up with a woman that is in no way interested in working with him after he betrayed her years ago to help Swamp Thing track down Abby, who was lost in the rot. And Swamp Thing goes out of his way to try and get Abby back. Constantine makes a reference to the fact that Swamp Thing used his body once to create a child for him. It's left on a cliffhanger. I'm not going to tell you exactly what happens, but it's definitely worth picking up if you're interested in the new Hellblazer ongoing series from DC's Rebirth story arc. No other heroes make appearances other than Swamp Thing, by the way. So this is pretty self-contained. And as far as I'm aware, it is the only magic book in the DC universe other than a Raven miniseries, which came out. Raven being the empath, half-demon, half-human Teen Titan. Yes.
Yeah.
That is it for magic books of the DC Rebirth story arc.
There's no Swamp Thing book. You know your stuff in order to write for magic.
Yeah, and Swamp Thing, I mean, sorry, and the Hellblazer is very... Sorry, there's also a Deadman miniseries currently out, but it's honestly, it's if you read the Deadman miniseries, it is strongly like... It has strong ties to Guillermo del Toro's Crimson Peak in a way. It's very much like a romantic ghost story,
okay.
with Dead Man trying to help some woman, and there's like romance and stuff involved, and it's a lot like Crimson Peak in my opinion. But Constantine, the Hellblazer, is the only magic book currently being produced in the Rebirth schedule of titles. So that's all you got, unfortunately. No Zatanna, no Justice League Dark, no Swamp Thing, no Dead Man ongoing, no Demon, no nothing else. But at least they have that one book, because for horror fans, that's also pretty much it.
So the end of the episode, we leave with Papa Midnight putting the blood of John Constantine on a voodoo doll, and that is what we know in the voodoo world as called a personal concern. Having a personal concern of someone, whether it's blood, hair, fingernails, you know, anything that's, you know, DNA kind of based, will give you a direct tie to the person upon which to do magic from a distance. So you can use any sort of personal concern. If you, like, sneak into someone's bathroom when you're there at a party and take some hair out of their hairbrush, that is enough to be able to do magic upon them at a distance. Personal concerns are used a lot in voodoo practices for a variety of causes. Like, you could use a personal concern with anything, and it will just direct that magic to that specific person. So in the end of the episode, he's like lighting this doll on fire. So yeah.
And Michael James Shaw, who plays Papa Midnight, will return in episode 5, The Dance of Vadu. He has been he's kind of a new actor. He's just getting his feet wet. He's had sporadic appearances. Longest set of appearances was on the short-lived TV series Limitless, which was based on the movie.
Awesome. That is also a very good episode, which we will get to in about a month.
Yes, so don't forget, you can please leave a comment rating for this episode on iTunes. It would be greatly appreciated. If you'd like to send us some email, you can at thatradioofhorror@gmail.com, or you can find us on the Dead TV Podcast Facebook page, or on our individual Twitters at ChrisDSAV.
And at Elegantly Kinky.
And don't forget to check out the rest of our episodes here on the RadioHorror.com site, which will have all the Constantine episodes, as well as the last show we did, Kindred the Embraced. And we have a Patreon, too. And if you'd like to help support the Dead TV Podcast, please go to Patreon. We have some cool prizes that I will send out to you if you become a sustaining member of our Patreon page. It would be awesome. Yes. I'll have posters for recently movie King Kong, and I will have posters Ghost in the Shell and pins from last year's Ghostbusters movie, as well as upcoming posters for other horror movies like Alien. And I have other prizes to give away. So if you become a sustaining member for the first time, we will send you a prize, and then you can continue becoming a sustainer member, and we will read your name in the air, and also probably eventually have like original content for our sustaining listeners as well. Please check that all out, and look for our Constantine commentary for the movie. And I am your thank you for tuning in. I am your host, Dr. Chris,
and I'm Mr. Zeneca.
And this is and also thank you to Jess O'Lantern for her awesome theme song for us, which we will play out to you now.